Everyone is on.
Introducing
Pretty Girls Love Real Estate. Stories of everyday women breaking barriers and building wealth through real estate.
Let's get it.
Boss. B-O-S-S.
Hello, hello. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Pretty Girls Love Real Estate podcast. I'm your host, Jessica Washington, and I am super excited for my guest today. I have another episode with two lovely ladies here, Ms. Smita and Chetna Lal. They do apartment syndications all across the country, and their story of how they got into real estate is completely fascinating. So I'm really excited to talk to them today. All right, ladies, how are you?
Really good.
So good.
Very much looking forward to talking to you. So this morning's been very nice.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. So these ladies are sisters. They're in the Northern Virginia area. So first and foremost, how did you ladies get into real estate?
You want to go, Chetna? I feel like she's the one who got in first. She's my older sister because everyone always can't tell. So I'm just going to say it.
It actually was an influence from my parents and grandparents. And back in India, they owned a lot of real estate. One grandfather lost a lot through the British taking his lands. Mm-hmm. And the other grandfather was able to keep it because he happened to be a member of parliament. So anyways, they taught my father, who the first thing he did when he came to this country, he and my mom together saved like crazy and within 5 years bought their first house. And that had a tremendous impact on me.
For me, it's I definitely saw Chetna while I was growing up. We're a couple of years apart, and she got into real estate. I was a bit daunted by it. I was like, I'm not sure what my sister's doing. But what turned around was in my 20s, and now I'm about 20 years from that. In my 20s, I would see that, you know, as I'm working in my job, it wasn't getting me that lifestyle that I would dream of, or how do people retire and not worry, you know? And I kept thinking as the years went by, there's something missing. Why don't I understand what that clue is? And then honestly, it's sort of funny. She was right, like literally driving distance away from me. There's one of the big clues. And I understood it's investing, but I didn't really understand how to get into it, from stocks to housing. And then these conversations started and I got into it. And I love it because it filled in the blanks of, oh, that's how you close that gap. And there we are.
The rest is history.
The rest is history.
Awesome. So you ladies, real estate is not like your background. That's not what you went to school for. What was your, you know, career before real estate, and how did you transition over to real estate full time?
Well, my background is my bachelor's and master's are actually in public policy and management. So I thought I'd end up in some aspect of government or consulting. I worked for Deloitte. I switched over because I was doing healthcare at Deloitte, and I made a sharp turn into sales and did pharmaceutical sales with Merck for 5.5 years, which was very, very, actually, honestly, it's very helpful here in being able to network and talk to people and understand how to manage business relationships. So that was one thing. And another unusual thing that is helpful is that in college, I was an RA for 3 or 4 years and managed a staff of 50 by the end. And all of those things were really the idea of creating community, helping people, being in touch, nurturing and growing. Like literally it takes a village to grow that village. It's delightful. It's really exciting. I get to have that influence and help me now.
And what about you, Chetna?
I went to school for engineering. I did civil engineering at Maryland and then graduate work at Carnegie Mellon because that was kind of not even a choice, to be honest. As an Asian raised kid, your parents drum it into you. But what I would say from that is that although I was able to work a full-time job, I constantly in the very beginning save like crazy to buy that first house. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to have real estate as your full-time position. You can have a full-time job, save like crazy, and do it part-time on the side, and it can completely transform your life.
Awesome. So at what point, or was there a particular deal, or was there a particular situation that you guys were like, I just want to do this completely full-time?
That's a good question.
I actually have never done it full time. I did work full-time in another job, and I always did part-time. And that's what I love about it, actually, is that you never have to. At this point, still, I don't do it full-time. The beauty of it is real estate can completely give back to you and give you a great life, and you don't have to do it full-time. Mm-hmm. You have to take it seriously. You have to know how to do the numbers, but you don't have to do it 40 hours.
I was going to caveat that sometimes definitely you work full time, but sometimes you're totally not working full time. So if a deal is coming in, that woman is on deck. Like there's,
it's like, yeah, it's your own business. So at that time for 6 weeks or even 8 weeks, I'm working 7 days a week, 8 hour days, you know, it's just, well, it's probably not a solid 8 hour day. It's off and on. I get to choose, which is nice. But there is hard work, and I don't mean to say that there isn't.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about some of those deals. Like, you all started with single family homes. At what point did you decide that you wanted to go bigger and transition to do larger apartments?
About 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago, I think Jethna and I were already looking for something different. And Jethna's really good about finding different educational programs or scoping out what is out there. So she was saying, Smita, we're already doing this. We're rehabbing homes. What if we did something that had greater economy of scale? What if we tried something more? And I think we were sort of thinking closer to 10 units or 2 units or 4 units, but we jumped in and bought a 36 unit. And we've had some wonderful mentors that helped us. We didn't just jump in cold, but it was a really great step, really great step.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that particular deal? And then how was it for you in terms of like raising capital? Had you ever done that part of it before?
No, well, I've been in sales off and on for almost 20 years. I feel like if you're working anywhere, you're actually at some level a little bit in sales because your position, you need to be able to present yourself. So in a way, I felt like I was prepared for that role. And I like fundraising, like I really enjoy it, but I'll go into that in a minute. We were rehabbing, and as we were doing that, we were talking to the property manager, and she mentioned that she knew, because I said, well, we're looking at apartments as well. And she said, well, there's this 36 unit coming up. And I said, can you put us in touch? And it's just that conversation, the flow, it happened. We networked, we met with him. The broker went and checked it out, and we loved that building. You know how you fall in love with someone, you're a little bit soft. We drove that building just around, you know, it's so pretty, well, like me. And it was great. But the next part was, is okay, we've got to find the financing. And I'm going a little bit off, but I think this is important. When we found the financing and did the fundraising, the financing took a little while. And I tell people who go into commercial real estate to start building those relationships, ask the broker for help. I used to think asking one or two banks is enough. I didn't understand that in residential real estate, which I practice here in DC, Maryland, Virginia, is different than commercial. And actually you can do it in both, it doesn't matter. But the point is you look for that lender, you look and look and look to find somebody. It's not two lenders. We called maybe 10, 15 lenders. And then we found one who took us seriously and said, I really get it. I get your dream. I mean, he literally was really with us on board. And we were so happy about that. And then we fundraised, and we literally were telling people about this probably 2 months in advance when we felt like it was secure enough, like it's under contract. We feel that this is really a go. And we started discussing it with people. We had already said we're going into this vein of real estate, but now we started discussing it a little bit more. There's a great property. We're thinking about it. And then, hey, we're going to do a Zoom call. And we had that call. And before the call, we were funded 20 minutes before the call, fully funded. Wow. It was a small raise, but it was really breathtaking. So I explained it as a story just so people can understand that full breadth of financing, mm-hmm. and that it's not always so clean looking when you go through the process. But don't worry about that. Just keep going.
Yeah. And it's constant conversations with people, sharing what you want to accomplish. And the fact that if you've done it at different scales before, so for example, if you bought a house before or a rental property and you've saved up and you share your accomplishments as well. So people know, oh, you really do accomplish when you set your mind to something, you actually do it. So we're sharing this and we're talking about how we are interested in buying this property and we're looking at things in the, you know, it was 1.325 million, the first one. And, you know, that we're going to have to probably raise about 300,000, 400,000. So we're just letting people know months in advance, letting them know. And then when the time came, people were ready because they had moved money around. They knew they wanted to invest. Mm-hmm. They were ready to go because people usually need 30 days to prepare themselves, pull it out of stocks, get it ready. So we gave them that time.
Okay, awesome. So what advice would you give to maybe some young person or someone that's looking to get into doing syndication deals themselves, especially maybe a young woman out there?
I'd say find somebody that you know who could just guide your process if you can. If you already know the process, then that's absolutely fine. But I would say, you know, like, for example, give us a call. We'd be happy. I know Smita and myself would be thrilled to explain the process to somebody so they have a heads up that this is what comes first, this is what's second, this is what's third, this is the process. So if you can find somebody, great. If you can't, you can go online and the process is spelled out online. But to me, a lot of those steps aren't always clear. Like when they say, you know,
find a deal.
Property. Yeah. Like, ideal, inspect the property. You're like, well, how do we inspect a property? What does that mean? And the first time we hired a commercial inspector, and that cost us about $4,000, something like that. The second time we just called a bunch of plumbers, electricians, and said, hey, we need you to come out and check it out. They charged $100 here, you know, like it was so inexpensive compared to the first time. And we got much more detailed reports than the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nita, what about you? Any words of advice or wisdom for the young syndicators out there?
I think for the syndicators out there, and especially a young woman, have faith in yourself. This is a really big one. Have faith in yourself. I think of women before me who have done the work so that we can move forward, and they want you to succeed and you want to succeed. And when you go forward from that space, then you talk to your friends. Then if you're going from, I don't know if you're going to want to invest in this. This isn't what do you have and I hope I can sell it to you. This is, look at what I found. I have found a diamond in the rough. Mm-hmm. It is a value. And I am going to really take this and grow it. And you're going to enjoy this. And you don't want to miss this ride. You want to come. And as you keep,
It's an invitation versus, you know.
And it's true. It is an invitation. They want to test it out. And what's funny to me is that the friends that, and it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. So please hear this out too. This is very important for, I think for particularly young women, I don't know, maybe young men, doesn't matter. But the point is don't take it personally as you're fundraising. So you're finding that deal, you're talking to the financing. Like yesterday, we just had an appointment with someone who's a bit disappointing. We went to a bank and that's okay. Jethma and I went out and had lunch and we laughed our tails off afterwards. In the same way, we went and just, when I'm fundraising, some of my closest friends are not comfortable. And you know what I've said to them? I've said, okay, that's good. Because you think that our friendship is more important than to risk it. You know what? Don't invest right now. That means that it's that critical to you. Don't do it. Don't take it personally. But do you know someone else? And the funny thing is there are people we don't know who listen to us, talk to us, and they're like, yep, I'm 100,000 in. We're just like, wait, okay, that was easy. And then the others who are like 25,000, whoa, you know, I need to think. And that's okay. Wherever you are on the spectrum, you grow with them. You allow them to be there. And as you keep doing that, that trust builds. And that, I think that's something that I really love growing is trust. And you honor that word. When you give your word to them and you say you're going to call them or you're going to be with them, you really do what you say. And if you can't, you let them know that you can't do it until when, you know, so that they can build that relationship with you and trust you.
I think that's so key, integrity. That what you just described was integrity. It is so important because if you are there for the small things, such as a call or a follow-up, then you'll be there for the big things because they'll know you'll protect their money, just like you protect, you know, a meeting or anything else. You know, if you're consistent, people know that. They like, I think that's been so key for us is our investors will tell us over and over, we know you two, we don't know this other person, you know, who you brought onto the team. How do we know we can trust them? Or we want to know that you are the leads in all of this. To have, you know, not one, but 10, 15 people say that to you and that we're investing because of you, it means the world, you know, and they will say that to you. They will say that we trust you. We know you've got our back.
Yes. Yeah. So relationships matter and your reputation is everything in this business. So
ladies. Well, even if it's bad news during the deal. Even if there's like bad news, you're afraid it's going to go sideways. You tell them, sorry, it's delayed. I'm sorry. We have to fundraise more than we thought, or this is not going exactly how we thought. Your investors, you're treasuring their money. You are literally holding it as if it's your own. And it's they want to know that, number one. And if you don't feel that way, then think hard until you do, to be really honest.
Yeah.
And then second, after you've felt that, then you just want to make sure that they know, hey, it's shaky here, but this is what we're doing to protect it. This is what we're doing, because people don't like surprises. I mean, maybe a surprise party, but they don't like surprises anywhere else.
So for example, in this second deal, we had some delays because Fannie couldn't find inspectors in time. And so we were supposed to close end of February. Instead, we closed April 19th. That's a big difference. People have already taken their money out. The stock market's going crazy. They're like, hey, hold on, what's going on? You know, you said end of February, and now we're in, you know, end of March, we're starting April. So it was a very big deal to say, listen, you know, staying in communication, having a call, having a Zoom call with everybody on it, say, listen, this is what's going on. We are moving as quickly as we can. We cannot control the way Fannie Mae operates. And we know they're very thorough, and we will let you know as soon as we do, you know, and we just stayed in contact with everybody. If they chose to be on the call or not, that was absolutely fine. We recorded it and we would send it out.
Awesome. Yeah, just stay in contact with your investors, you know, assuage any of their, you know, fears or their risks or anything that they have where they feel uncomfortable at the situation. So I like that advice. I want to shift gears a little bit. Before we talked, you guys told me a couple of different stories of, you know, when you were investing back in the day. And then on this show in general, we always talk about the perspective of women in this male dominated industry. And I would love for you guys to share if there's any situation that you face where you felt there was some type of challenge or anything that was, you know, thrown upon you because you were a woman or because you were a woman of color.
I can speak to that for sure. I started when I was 20 years old, so I got to see a lot, and I'm 50 now. So I got to see quite a bit, and I would walk into, say, a model home and say, oh, I want to buy this house. And they would say, well, you can't afford it. We're very sorry. And they hadn't looked at my financials. I hadn't spoken to anybody about financials, but they automatically determined that I couldn't afford it. And the attitude I took was, well, you just lost a really great customer. Goodbye. And I'd move to the next one, you know? And there is always a salesperson out there who wants to make a commission. It just has to work for me. And so I always made sure it worked for me. And if, you know, there's not much you can do if they absolutely refuse to work with you, what are you going to do? I'm just going to move on to the next one. I'm not going to give them any more energy or my time. They don't deserve it. And so I just move on. But it was really, really hard in the beginning because I was just heartbroken that, you know, how could you not even want to find out? Like, I can afford this. I've been saving all this time. I'm all ready. And you're not even willing to talk to me. But I knew that was like probably, you know, just perfect that I move on to the next place that actually wants someone like me. And so I kept at it. And then the other part is lenders. I can't tell you how many lenders, even lenders who were friends, who would say, you can't afford it. Sorry, you can't afford it. And I would just have to say, okay, no problem. Let's find the next one. And back then I would apply easily 6-7 lenders easily for a residential home. I don't think that's as common anymore. People are not as judgmental, I guess. I don't know what the word is, but back then, forget it. I would have a solid job, solid savings. And they say, oh, it's your credit score. Okay. Another time it's like, sorry, you don't make enough money. Whatever it is, you'll find somebody who actually says it's okay. Mm-hmm. So whatever their constraints are for their lending organization, they're lost. Move on to the next one. That's all I can say. It took, I mean, that went on for years and years and years. It was not a one-time thing. So I don't know if that still happens. I bet you it does, especially in the Midwest. I would not be surprised at all. I bet it happens everywhere, to be really honest. I don't think it has actually stopped. The only thing that's changed is I have a history at this point of properties. So I'm going to say a lot of you may deal with this. I hope not. I really pray you don't. But if you do, don't give up. Just keep going. Just keep going. Find a lender that'll work with you. It's everything.
Right. Okay. Samita, you have any experiences you want to share?
It's probably more cultural than anything. It's I'm sure there is some inherent bias. I've noticed that when there's somebody who is with us who is not POC, I can't think of the right. Often the broker will turn to them, will look to them. Even when I bought my first condo 20, wow, something many years ago, I think I was 27, now I'm 43. I think I'm 40, yeah. But anyways, I don't remember. But I remember walking in the room and he's like, okay, who's that young lady, but who's the buyer? And it's like, I'm the buyer, the buyer. And that was the seller asking that. Because he was an older gentleman. So you just have to get used to that, you don't have to get used to that, but be prepared that, you know, just as walk in that room and just be that person. I am, and that you are the one, you are the buyer, you are that person. But the second part was is culturally, and I don't know, different people, different walks of life. Sometimes I think they can't say my name right, Smita. So if I leave a voicemail, I don't like that I've done this, but I'm not sure yet. I want to get the calls back. So I sometimes say that my name is Smith. And you know what? I get a lot more calls back. They're wondering who this woman is, that's Smith, but they can say it. And I think that it's not a conscious thing. I actually think it's a subconscious thing that they're like, oh, I know who to call back versus I'm nervous. I don't want to make a mistake. I'll call them later, and later becomes never. So, okay. So that's my...
That's interesting. Okay. Yeah. So in general, since you ladies have been doing this now for 20 plus years, what's your opinion of the market now? And I guess, what are some things that you see that have changed since you first started and some things that you think are, you know, still the same old, same old?
You want to go?
I'll think of an answer.
Things that have changed is when I bought my first condo was in 2004 and I could feel it. Like I had been listening to Chetma and we have another sister and they're like, you should buy now. Wait too late. Like I could feel like there was a point where it was going to be too late. I was like, this is too hot. Something's off. And I follow my intuition or my instinct, whatever you want to say that is, and followed that. And I'm glad I did. I bought it and I did well, but it was interesting. It was a DC condo and the market heated and melted and it did well. It did well as an investment, but there are also, what I was going to say is investments now or things that I'm learning that are in other markets. So you think that you're in this one central big market, it's going to like blow up. It can, it may not. I did modestly well on that one, but I learned so much. It was well worth every single dollar, every single penny. But like, you know, there are just places around the US that are blowing up. There are secondary and tertiary markets. And I would say the second thing is maybe not always try and time the market. You know, if it's a house that you're going to live in, just buy the house that you like and you think it'll be an investment in the future, buy the house that you like and live in it. And someone else is gonna like what you like. I mean, at least the general bones of it, unless you're painting it all bright, great purple, but I mean, they're going to like that. And then you can rent it out. And if you're growing into a different thing where you're looking at markets, then find a parameter that's really important to you and hold to it. And in these markets, like as the markets go up and down, because that's what I like to study. If you're trying to time it and you don't read about it and you don't train yourself, it's just risky and it's not going to work. I mean, it's like playing blackjack, you know, it's a gamble. Mm-hmm. Then
I think I'd like to add to yours, which is, I don't think anything has really changed too much. It's just, now I know what the cycles are better and that's the only thing that's changed. So what I would recommend to somebody who's really fiscally careful, you know, that they're say every penny is very important. I would say anytime you buy a property, know what the rents are in the area and know that if anything goes wrong, you can always, you know, walk out of the house, move into a smaller place, you could rent that place out. So know what the rents are and make sure the rents are enough to cover the mortgage. If not, break even, even make a profit. Don't buy anything where the rents won't cover your mortgage. So if, as long as you buy that way, no matter what happens to you, no matter, you know, if you lose your job and you need to move into your parents' basement, whatever, it doesn't really matter. You just rent that house out. That house will keep building equity for you and become a bank account for you over time. So just let every house become your little bank account, but make sure that the rents will cover your mortgage. I think that's the only thing I would say. It doesn't matter what the market's doing, where you are in the cycle. If your rents cover your mortgage, you're fine.
Awesome. So the game is pretty much stayed the same, but Chet has just become a better player.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Is as far as the deals that you're looking for now, you know, what types of deals are you looking for? Or if you have any specific criteria, you know, for somebody that may be listening out there, this could be a, you know, a source of a deal for you ladies.
Right now we're looking, we've been in the Midwest, which we like. We're also now looking in Florida and Georgia. We love the Carolinas. Oddly enough, I have my eye on West Virginia. I know almost no one else does, but I do. but I'm basically keeping my eye on that southern half of the coast right now. And we're just looking for something. It could probably be smaller. We're looking in specific markets, not southern Florida. I'm not feeling comfortable with that. And I don't know if you want to add to that, Jetna.
No, I think that's it. I think that's a great idea. And anything, if you can get out into secondary or tertiary markets, that's where you want to be. You don't want to be, say, smack dab in Jacksonville, smack dab in Tampa. It's just going to be insane, crazy. People are just buying everything cash. It's even apartment complexes. They're coming up with 3,000, 3 million, 4 million, 10 million cash. That should tell you what's out there. It's just crazy. So go, if you're starting, if you're new, go to the secondary and tertiary markets, go out there and go look at, you know, different counties, wherever you are. Go to the Midwest like we did. That's how we started to make sure that we could afford and be able to raise responsibly. And then we start to grow from there. So I would say just, you know, get out a little bit into the burbs, if you will, that you know people want to live there.
I was going to add on it, but if someone is looking to bring, like you said, what deals we're looking for.
Oh, well, right.
They're looking for economic drivers, areas that have strong economics. They don't have to be, like she said, in the main hot city, but they can be in the burbs or exoburbs, a little bit further out. But as long as they have something, military, hospital, something that's driving, that's something that we're looking for, and a solid population.
Do you all have a specific like wheelhouse in terms of the number of units or the like class B building, class C building, something like that?
Class B, class C is definitely our choice. Anything with value add, that's definitely what we're looking for. In fact, what I was gonna say is in fact, we should probably apply and be ready with you. In case anything falls through, if you have anything on the road, but that's not part of the interview. So let me.
Well, and I think that the size or the number, well, the size of the unit does matter, but the number of units does not necessarily matter. I used to think that it did. I think we're probably, a dear friend of ours told us about a wonderful, I think it was a 9-unit. That he was cash flowing $7,000 on. And at that point, my mind was blown. I said, okay, I've changed how I view things. Small is fine, big is fine, but do the numbers work? And so we keep our eyes open now.
Okay, there you have it. There you have it, ladies. All right, so if there are any events or initiatives, anything exciting you all wanna share that you have coming up soon?
Okay. For Syndication Sisters, I think we're going to have we have an interview with our multifamily accountant. He focuses on multifamily and we'll be bringing him questions. So that's something we have coming up and we'd love any questions anybody has, we can have them answered. Then after that, we're looking at self-directed IRAs as a vehicle for investing in multifamily. So we'll have a talk in June on that and probably July as well. So we have a couple of different Zoom calls coming up that we'd love people to come join.
Yeah, just syndication sisters having casual conversations. And it's almost like coffee talks. Usually it's 5-7 people. I don't mind if it's bigger, but it's usually that size. And we're just having a conversation about either now with people interviewing or just generally an open talk about the process so that people can understand.
How would they reach us? Through Syndication Sisters on Facebook?
Yeah, that would be easiest.
Or would they probably post it on there?
Yeah, is it okay that we're sharing that right now, Jessica?
Oh, of course. Yeah. And then when you actually, you know, finalize the information, I'll put it in the show notes and, you know, I can blast it out, whatever you guys need.
Oh, thank you. For sure. Send it to you. But they can reach us at Syndication Sisters or my name is Smita Lal. You can see it probably on there and you'll find me on Facebook. So DM me, PM me, whatever.
Okay. Awesome, ladies. So this was a great conversation. I'm going to move on to the last segment of the show, which is called The Fabulous Four. And it's four questions I ask all my guests. So I want to hear from both of you ladies about these questions. So first and foremost, what is your favorite book about real estate?
So for me, it's really simple. It's Rich Woman. It's by Kim Kiyosaki, which is Rich Dad's wife. Mm-hmm. His book is good, but it's kind of difficult after a certain point, but hers is very basic, very simple. It's great for anybody who's just starting out.
Mine is a little bit specific towards economics and multifamilies, but it's called Emerging Markets by Dave Lindahl. I really like emerging markets because even when I was in as I practice residential real estate, people will ask me, are we in a bubble? and you know, I read Financial Times, I read articles all the time. My goal is to understand what those trends are. And I'm not feeling that at all. But that's another topic we're not. But the main point is that book allows you to start learning what the trends and the roles of a seller and buyer's market are, whatever city you're in. And I really enjoy that because then it gave me so many answers to why, when I was buying residential real estate in 2010 in Virginia, for example, why there were investor bidding wars. I thought, wait, the market melted. Why are there bidding wars? But now I understood. And where we are right now in this market. So that's a great book to understand economic trends. Purchasing. Yeah.
Awesome recommendation. Thank you. Second question is, what advice would you give to your younger selves just starting out in real estate?
For me, I would say after, you know, the first, three, four houses, get into multifamily. Move into multifamily. It's just real estate on steroids, as long as you know how to underwrite it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think something similar, which is just don't be afraid. Just get into investing and owning real estate and understanding, you know what? It would actually be a step before real estate. At that time, even though I'd studied statistics, my background is actually decision analysis and stats. I was still nervous about finance, which is personal finance. And I'd have said, you know what? Don't be afraid of it. Go out, learn it, talk about it, talk to people about it, and get grounded as soon as possible so that you can make that first investment.
You know, that's such a good point. I think, I don't know why, women don't like to talk about money, or at least they didn't before. Maybe we're starting to do that now. And I'm so happy about that. But I can see if I ever bring up money sometimes with a group of women, they cringe. Like, they don't want to talk about money. And you spend 40 hours a week making it and you don't want to talk about managing it. Doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Get your financial health together and then said start investing as soon as possible, start, you know, trying to go bigger as soon as possible. So,
and can I add something just so that people understand how far someone like me has come, so that people who are really not clear, like, you know, I was unemployed at 22, 23. It was the Y2K time. you may have been too small, but
that, like, it was yesterday.
It was like, oh, I'm not working right now and I'm trying to do a career change. And there was a point where I was paying my student loans with my unemployment. Like, as I look back, I'm like, what was I doing? You know, like, I did not have that financial sense of what to pay first and where to focus and what to do. And it's to the point where now I can look at a property or look at my finances and my investments and feel very proud and very solid of that cornerstone I've created. It's not impossible. And you're talking to someone who was very afraid of looking at her 401k that her company matched up to 6% back in 2005. I was afraid. I had a girlfriend sit with me and help me put and pick small cap and big cap stocks or whatever it was, you know, at that time. I was afraid to log in. Like, I'm that person, afraid to log in. And now I'm like, okay, Jetna, you know, let's get our coffee together and let's start paying the bills. It's this. And it's great. You can do that. If I can do that, I'm telling you, if I can do that, a woman who was really paralyzed and hoped that the stack of bills sometimes would just disappear to let's get on that. Let's knock this out. I know other people can do it. I know. So.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, because that's one of the things, one of the goals for that show is to, of this show is to, you know, let someone out there that may be doubting themselves, maybe thinking, oh, I'm starting off, you know, way down at the bottom. But, you know, wherever you're starting at, there's also hope that you can build up to, you know, something beyond your wildest imagination. So just wherever you're starting, get started as soon as possible and then just keep going from there.
I always worry. Some of the things I feel like I did were so crazy, but that's really what made all the difference for me. So I'm nervous to share it sometimes. So for example, like when I bought a townhouse, the basement would always be a separate rental. Like I would rent it out separately and I would live upstairs because I was a single mom, didn't have any child support, nothing like that, but I had a good job. So I'd take care of my son and me, but I'd rent out that basement. Whatever rent came in from the basement would get put in a different account. That's what I used to buy a house. Cause I almost could never save enough. I never had enough money between the daycare and trying to figure out how to pay mortgage, just never had enough money. So I don't know if that's really crazy behavior. And there were times where I rented out rooms in the house. I rented out the basement and rented out as many rooms as I could, just so I could, you know, like get to that goal and save up as much money. Didn't have to do that for very long, but I did have to do that for a period of time, for a couple of years. Didn't save money up.
That's become more commonplace, you know, with Airbnb. People are renting out their basements, rooms. Yeah. And so you got to get creative. So
yeah, you got to get creative. And that's what that's right. Now everyone's doing that. That's right. I forgot about Airbnb.
Yep, for sure.
Just a whore sister in the beginning.
All right, so the third question is, what topic in real estate do you ladies want to personally learn more about?
I think right now it's not like a class, that's why I'm hesitating, but it's more of like really grasping the different types of financing, really understanding everything so that if I find a property that's a four unit that needs value add, am I looking at a bridge? What type of financing? Jetna may be more advanced at that, but I really would like to get some mastery over that. And so as I pick a property, I already am like, oh, and that's going to go and finance it. And that's how I'm going to do it. I really like the idea that it's that easy. So that's my next, that's really what I'd like to get some education on.
For me, it's systems. So for example, when I bought residential real estate and I knew I was going to have to talk to six lenders, I would take like my bank statements, because you need 2 months, you need like 2 years tax returns back in the day, and I put it all into one file. And then I would, you know, make copies of it and send it out to all six at one time, so I wouldn't waste time. So I had a system for that. Well, I don't have a system yet for running everything that we do with multifamily. Now that we're building up, I want more systems in place so that I can have that part-time life I still enjoy having. You know, I don't want to work full-time, or I don't want to work too many hours. And the only way to do that is by building those systems. And so I'm still trying to figure out what are those systems that we need to have. What software do I need to buy if I need to buy one? Because we couldn't afford to do it in our first and second deal, but now we can. And so now what do we do? What software do we need to have in place to help us manage our investors, to help manage the different properties, just so that it's not like all in my head, it's now handled.
Yep. And it helps, because then you can, you know, focus more on getting more deals, you know, interacting with your investor clients, and even, you know, at some point pass along some of those tasks. And like you said, work less hours because, you know, you've got someone in place to handle all those things for you.
Yes. I literally, this was the biggest breakthrough for me, was to realize I could afford to pay someone to open my mail and organize that, which is so ridiculous because you're too afraid, you know, for after all these years, you've just lived a very tight budget that even, wait, I can have someone come do the laundry, come open mail and throw away trash, like just little things on a regular basis to make my life easier. So that's nice. That probably wouldn't help anybody, but it helps me a lot.
Oh yeah, no, it would definitely help. Even, you know, people feel ashamed that they have someone come in to cook for them or someone to come clean their house. It's all about, you know, self-care, you know, utilizing your time, which is more valuable, to go out and find deals. And like I said, network with other people. So those little things that you can delegate to somebody else, it, you know, helps out a lot.
Oh my God, that's a big one right there, cleaning house. When I sat down and calculated how long between the asthma attack and everything, how long it took me to clean a house, I realized I could make so much more money if I paid someone else to clean the house. Mm-hmm. And for over 25 years, I have not cleaned a house because, you know, it is more economically, you know, it's better for me financially to hire someone to do that.
Yep. And that's their profession. So more than likely they're better at it than you too. And they could do it.
I'm terrible. Yeah, I know. I've been banned from doing laundry, vacuuming. I can't even tell you all the things I'm banned from. But luckily there's other things I do well.
Definitely. All right. So lastly, can you ladies please give a shout out to another woman that's out here doing great things in real estate?
Well, I would like to. We've just finished a deal that's 65 units, and we're very fortunate that we have a sponsor, Rebecca Stupnagel of Solid Door Investments. So she is taking over, as far as I can tell, Texas right now. and she has been a great help to us. And I think her partner, Kathy Fontana. So they've been very, very good in helping us out and giving us a step as we needed it as we closed our last deal.
Awesome.
Very knowledgeable.
Shout outs.
You know, the people, I agree with Smita very much with Rebecca Stupnagel, but the people who come to me, come to my mind are the people I turn to, like my mom, you know, in the beginning, she gave the best financial advice for real estate, but nobody else knows them. So I would say Rebecca for sure.
Yeah. Okay. You're probably going to say Kim Kiyosaki.
You know, I've met her and I have read her book, and I really do. I think she's the brains behind that operation. That's all I'm going to say. She is the brains behind that operation.
I will say, this is a little bit random, but it's not direct real estate, but she is someone who probably inspires tons of people. And I'm going to say Oprah, which everyone's heard, but I'm going to tell you why. It's not because she's Oprah talk show and this and that. It's because we listened to her talk. We went and listened live, and the key thing that she said in the very beginning, the network allowed her to invest in herself, and she bought the rights to herself. And I have been fascinated by that concept ever since. It took off because she invested in herself. She had faith in herself. So, I can't wait. I'm also I love your interview with Garland. I cannot remember her last name, but wow. Just
Butler, yeah.
Yes, just the knowledge, and I'm enjoying all of the interviews, but boy, that one just like, oh. So.
Well, so shout out to Garland.
Shout out to Garland, to Rebecca. I guess there's just a lot of women out there that are helping us get where we need to go. It's not always direct, but
yeah, absolutely. And that's why I love, you know, about this. There's so many women. It doesn't have to be necessarily like you go out and do real estate deals, but there's so many like ancillary things that involve real estate. And that's another thing I want to, you know, shed light on with this podcast, is you don't just have to be selling houses or doing deals or in finance or whatever to be doing real estate. So thank you for that. Thank you for that. All right. So how can people get in touch with you? I know you mentioned Facebook. Is there any other ways people can get in touch with you?
Yeah, there's Facebook, there's definitely LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn, Smita Lal. But don't worry, Chetna and I work together all the time. around. And you'll probably find even my real estate, because I sell and do residential real estate under Treasure Homes VA on Facebook. So I'm sort of a mixed bag, but it's, I think I'm the main person to contact. I don't know if I should give out my cell phone number, but I can. I don't know.
Your email, smithalal@yahoo.com, right?
Yeah, that's a good one. smithalal@yahoo.com. Really simple. It's my name at yahoo.com.
Awesome. Yeah.
And we really do enjoy talking to people. We try and make an effort to talk to probably someone new every single week or every other week, just to get to know them, help them out, or maybe they're helping us out, you know, and get to make sure we're all building in the right direction where we all want to go.
And you, to spell your name, it's like Smith, but without the H, there's an A at the end.
Yeah. So Smita Lal, smitalal@yahoo.com.
Okay, awesome. We'll spell it out on the video here and then in the notes for if you're watching on YouTube or you're listening to this on whatever podcast network, it'll be in the show notes as well. So,
yes.
Should we give a shout out to Janair?
Yeah, Janair is also a wonderful woman that we're working with, and she's building her business in Baltimore as a fundraiser. And so she's just a delightful woman, and she's also starting her investment journey. And Marilyn Wu. Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. Now we're just going to go crazy.
I was thinking the same thing. Marilyn Wu. How did I not mention Marilyn? She's doing amazing, generous work. Just
she and Dana Cole are looking to, what is it called? Own the Block? Is that what it's called?
Buy the Block.
Sorry?
Buy the Block.
Buy the Block, or yeah. So buying housing. Teaching women to be able to afford to buy their first house, creating affordable housing with investors investing in it so that it's not bought out by just investors only profit oriented. They're doing some really cool projects in Baltimore. So Marilyn Wu would definitely be someone very interesting. Yeah.
But we just,
three. I know, we're both just like.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the love, love the love. Shout out as many people as you can think of.
There's just some really dynamic people doing cool things, and what they're trying to do in Baltimore, I think, is just really fabulous, you know? So
oh, right. Shout out to you, Marilyn. Appreciate you. Yeah. All right. So lastly, any last words of wisdom for the listeners out there? Any final thoughts?
I'd say, you know, Chetna, you and I talked about this, take calculated risks. And I think women are really, really excellent at that. The only thing is that sometimes we hold off. And I'd say in real estate, I think so many people are trying to sell you something that you get a little bit nervous, but it's funny. We don't stop for investing in our 401ks or for trying some stock or heck, $100 in Bitcoin, or a new pair of shoes and that, you know, and a pedicure, somehow that investment in ourselves happens. But, you know, if you're trying to build up those blocks, it's a calculated risk and talk to people, talk to different people until you feel comfortable, but, you know, save up and find a way to do it and don't stop yourself. Don't talk yourself out of it. You know,
I used to teach motorcycle classes, the MSF classes, and women always took the class very differently than men. They, oftentimes the first time was just almost a shock for them. They would really need to take it a second time. And it's just giving themselves the comfort to, you don't have to do it on the same timeline as everybody else. Take your own timeline, do things in your own way, how it works for you. If you need to take that class twice, take it twice. You deserve it. You deserve all the attention and all the time that you need to get done, whatever you need to get done. And, you know, I think there's something out there that tells women, well, if they did it like in 3 days, I have to do it in 3 days. No, you don't. Do it in six, do it in a month, take your time, but do it. Just make sure you do it.
Awesome advice. Like, run your own race. Don't worry about, you know, whatever else somebody else did. You're only battling with yourself. So great, great advice. Thank you, ladies. This conversation was amazing. I really appreciate your time coming on the show. Thank you so much to the syndication sisters, Ms. Smita and Chetna Lal. This was a great episode. Thank you for tuning in. My name is Jessica Washington, and this was another episode of the Pretty Girls Love Real Estate podcast. Until next time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica. Thank you so much.
Thank you.